committee, and there was a difference between that version and the version that came out of the Senate. So there was a conference committee appointed, and lo and behold, me as a little freshman from Eastern Oregon was put on the conference committee. Then Representative Otto was also on that committee, and he instructed me as I went to that committee, Bob, stand firm in the House version. So here I was. That was my very first experience with the conference committee, and I had my instructions from then Representative Otto, and believe me, it wasn't really easy to do what he instructed me to do. But anyway, we got to do and evidently we made it a little too inflexible, and has led to the problem that we're dealing with today. The problem first came to my attention late in March of this session, and my first reaction was, well, Mr. This is a contractor, business owner in Hermiston, you've been negligent, you better do your homework and get that exam passed and get your license renewed, because I felt it was probably an isolated case. But some of my other colleagues got together and indicated that it was not an isolated case and that maybe we should make some effort to help these people. And so our interest in this bill is in Section 7, which creates a little narrow window to let these people who have, by one reason or another, let their license expire, which essentially puts them out of business. And the man in my district from Hermiston has three full-time employees and many times hires as high as 10. But his business is really down the tube unless he can renew this license. So he's a man 63 years old and has been in the business for some 30 years. And the new provisions of the Senate Bill 241 and 81 caught him by surprise. I think there's enough guilt on both sides, both the board and the individual, to point fingers in any direction you want to. But I think strictly from a business standpoint, it's well that we do this. And so I'm simply asking the committee to go along with this and put this little narrow window in there and let these people stay in business. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Phillips, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips, representative from Washington County. It's good to see all you members of the committee, including the graduate from Winfield, Ken Jernstedt. This bill...
excuse me, I'm almost beginning to feel proprietary that I need to start protecting the members.
don't worry, I can take it myself.
No problem. I would certainly let Senator Otto and Representative Shiprack guide you on the comments with regard to the fees and how it will affect the industry. I talked with both the senator and representative to ensure that they approved, and the industry did go along with all aspects of the bill, because frankly, Section 7 is also the particular interest of mine. Although I didn't have a constituent, I had an individual from Bend call me who has been in the field since he got out of World War II. I've been an electrician, never had any problems, a supervisor of a number of individuals, had a large business that was ongoing, thought he was up to date with the Department of Commerce because indeed they were doing business with him regularly, and then they sent him notice that his supervisor's license had expired and he no longer could do business. I won't go into any more detail other than the fact that in the bill it's also written so that this won't happen again, hopefully. They've written the notice that the Department of Commerce and the Builders Board will have to make a number of attempts so that the one letter that's sent out now and presumably received by the license holder won't be the process, and in fact they'll make sure the notice procedure is adequately done so that the individual who has a license does receive notice. In light of that, I would endorse what Senator Otto has certainly said, and perhaps what goes around, comes around. Representative Harper had the occasion of going in with Senator Otto and standing, holding the flag as he instructed as a freshman. As a freshman, I have the instructions to go in and hold that flag equally well, so I will do exactly what he says and does as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Senator Houck?
The not having the opportunity to really study the issues here and knowing that, you know, all of you have collectively looked at the amendments and endorsed them. Collectively, individually, is there any other issue involved in these amendments that we aren't, that they would cause, like expansion or contraction of scope of work or in any kind of jurisdictional that are wound up in any issue here?
Not to my knowledge, Senator Howe.
It's just straight licensure in the window that you're talking about.
May I comment, Mr. Chairman? We had Dan Smith, the administrator of the Building Codes Division, at a meeting that was held here on the Senate side, and there were members of the industry there, members of the Department of Commerce, the director of the Department of Commerce, Fred Hurd, and they were all there concerned about this problem. And the concern at that meeting was not the increase in the license fees or anything else. The concern was opening the window to allow these other people to come in. And a member of the electrical board, Mr. Greg Teeple, was there. And actually, under our present law, that electrical board is the one that has the clout as to whether or not these windows will be opened. And Greg Teeple, speaking for the board, indicated that they would have no problem with it, providing the window wasn't opened all the way up. In other words, we have a good electrical licensing law in this state, a very good one, and we did not want to do anything to jeopardize that. Now, on the increase in license fees, I mentioned earlier, and I don't know if I was complete in my explanation, a journeyman electrician now pays $15 for renewal of that license. But in addition, we have to go ahead and take continuing education every year, and that costs just $20, so there's $35 there. So now, under this proposal, it will be $100 for 3 years, and we save $5 by going over a three-year period. And it also gives more money for the electrical division to work with.
Martin. Thank you. Further questions?
My only question is, if that $15 isn't a little bit low, I think maybe we ought to consider doubling that or something like that. But that's all right.
I think this is the wrong time to argue that.
My only response was, at the present time, the construction trade is at a low ebb, and it might be better if the state would help subsidize out-of-work electricians in addition to their unemployment compensation.
Well, maybe we could put an amendment in there that this would affect only those members of the electrical journeyman group that are members of the legislature.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
This morning. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 744? Being none, we'll close the public hearing session.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the amendments to Senate Bill 744.
Senator Otto moves that let's open the work session on Senate Bill 744-3. Senator Otto moves that 744-3 amendments be adopted to Senate Bill 744. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. Senator Otto moves the bill to the President's desk with the request that the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Houck?
Aye.
Senator Jernstedt?
Aye.
Senator McCoy? Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Stokovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendricks?
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Otto, very much. Representative Kopetsky, let's open the hearing on House Bill 2364.
Next, Mr. Chair, there's two bills.
Yes, 2364 and 2591.
Touch on both of them, that'd be wonderful.
I can't imagine it. We need this.
I can't either.
We know you have to be testifying in two places almost at once this morning.
Yes, so. I have my truth and advertising bill on the lottery going on down state and federal affairs. They're dealing with Senate Bill 136 also.
Let's open the hearing then on 2364 and 2591, both of which interest you. Want to do 2364?
2364. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Kopetsky. I represent House District 33, which includes Salem, Kaiser, and West Salem, and I'm glad to see my senator here this morning. House Bill 2364 amends ORS Chapter 659, the Oregon Civil Rights and Unlawful Employment Practices Act. That law currently prohibits an employer from discriminating in compensation, terms, conditions, or privileges of employment on the basis of enumerated criteria such as race, sex, religion, age, and marital status. Labor organizations are also prohibited from such discrimination. Because only a certain segment of the workforce has children and would use daycare facilities, an employer who provides daycare for such employees may be viewed as bestowing unequal, quote, privileges of employment, unquote, to his or her employers under ORS Chapter 659. Employees who do not need daycare for their children could argue that failure to offer an economically equivalent benefit to employees who are not parents of small children constitutes unlawful discrimination. A similar argument could be made with respect to labor unions. Unlawful employment violations subject employers and unions to private administrative complaints, investigations by the Attorney General, and also private right of action. 2364 would remove any risk that an employer or union could be brought up on an unfair employment charges for providing daycare without compensation to parties who do not avail themselves of the benefit. Lack of adequate daycare is a serious problem facing Oregon employees and businesses, as well as the workers themselves. 2364 is aimed at removing any potential barriers to employers or union provision of daycare. Let me just say that the state of California adopted a similar provision in their code after a group in San Francisco, the Urban Law Center there, that had analyzed their laws in terms of discrimination. The federal government and our state as well does have on the books an employer employee tax benefits for providing child care as an employee benefit. Essentially, what happens is the employer would receive the business deduction for providing the daycare. The employee would not be taxed on that employee benefit. So it's a good benefit there. Many in the state, including the Bureau of Labor, are trying to educate and inform employers of this benefit, and we would hope that there wouldn't be any barriers to employers, responsible employers, seeing the advantages both productivity-wise and safety-wise for our children of having daycare operations or providing it as a employee benefit. Be glad to answer any questions.
Do you know of cases where unfair labor practice complaints have been filed? Unfair or unlawful employment practices have been filed because of an employer providing daycare?
Mr. Chair, no. In fact, this is a prospective type piece of legislation. There are few employers providing it, but it's growing. and we certainly don't want to have any barriers or potential barriers in the law of or questions about this employer benefit, and that's why the bill is before you.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions?
Only a comment. Yes, I can't Senator believe it. But
Okay,
2591. 2591, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is an update. I don't need to need to read my testimony on this committee about minimum wage law. Currently, the federal wage is $3.35, state wage is $3.10. This measure, all it would do is bring the state minimum wage, which affects very few employees, up to the same level as the federal minimum wage. I think there's a strong argument that what we're talking about here, or in a sense, it's a woman's issue. I've seen studies that suggest that about 74% of the people earning minimum wage are women, and I think that this is a good time to raise our wage to the same level as the federal government's. This, I think it's been 4 or 6 years since the state minimum wage has been raised. You'll notice also in the bill that in terms of the agriculture community, that it would be a two-step process rather than an immediate increase.
Mr. Chair, Senator Otto?
Yeah, in 1977, I served on the Labor Committee on the House side, and this issue was brought up at that time. I think that was the last time we raised the minimum wage. I'm not sure. But anyway, my question is, Representative Kopetsky, why can't we go ahead and pass legislation that would tie the state minimum wage to that of the federal minimum wage? Why can't we do it in so that if the federal minimum wage is increased, the state minimum wage would automatically be increased?
Mr. Chair, Senator Otto, I think there's great merit to that. The problem in that is a constitutional problem that we have here in terms of delegating to the federal government essentially a state legislative function, and I think we'd have a constitutional problem with that type of delegation.
May I respond? We do it with our tax code. We adopt the federal tax code in many cases.
Mr. Chair, Senator Otto, what we do is we adopt these federal tax code for a particular date. Of the tax code, we don't adopt the code prospectively or what the federal government may be doing prospectively. Senator Howe serves on the Revenue Committee. For example, could let you know if that were the case, then we would have reconnected automatically as the feds have changed theirs, because we have connected to the feds as of December 1981, January 1982 code, and the issue before the Revenue Committee is whether to connect to the 84 code, I believe.
Okay. Further questions for Representative Kopetsky? No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Let me ask first if there is anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2364. There being none. On 2591, Nellie Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Nellie Fox from the Oregon AFL-CIO. Our position is just to be sure that the committee is aware that we do support the bill of 2591, so sometimes there are questions whether organized labor does support a minimum wage, and we wanted to erase any possibility of that. We do support this. We think it's long overdue, and I wish we could attach it to the federal law like you suggested, Senator Otto, but in lacking the ability to do that, we certainly support the increase of it, and would like to see it happen right away.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone else wish to testify this morning on House Bill 2591? Marilyn Coffle from the Bureau of Labor and Industry. Good morning.
Good morning. Senator Starkovich, members of the committee, I just wanted to comment that this question of tying the minimum wage to the federal law came up on the other side, and I talked to Paul Tiffany and RAG, and there is the issue of, as Representative Kopetsky said, of constitutionality. So presently, it cannot be done. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Does anyone else wish to testify on 2591? If not, then we will close the public hearings on House Bills 2364 and 2591.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion?
These are scheduled for a work session on Monday.
Okay.
And so let's just go ahead and keep that. In fact, I believe all of these were scheduled for work session on Monday. Let's then open the public hearing on House Bill 2900, and Representative Larry Hill will be here momentarily.
Okay. We have a recess while we're waiting for
Representative. Well, I would ask that we stay.
Okay.
Should be just a moment.
I was only thinking of Senator Chernstead.
I appreciate your usual.
I tried.
Let me ask that we go into, even though these were scheduled for a work session on Monday, these last two bills that we just heard, let me ask if there be any objection among the members. So I'm going into work session now on those two bills. Okay, if not, then we will open the work session on House Bill 2364. Chair moves we send House Bill 2364 to the floor from the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Houck?
Aye.
Senator Jernstead?
Aye.
Senator McCoy? Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Motion carries. The chair would also move that we send House Bill 2591 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Now in work session on 2591. Discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Houck?
Aye.
Senator Jernstead?
Aye.
Senator McCoy? Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Henderson?
Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Jernstead?
I'll do it on 2900, even if Representative Hill hasn't been here. We'll just surprise you.
Let's do that.
We have someone signed up in opposition this morning to House Bill 2900, I think. Okay.
Perhaps could we hear the opposition first?
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Get caught up with the rest of the committee here. Representative Larry Hill is currently in the process of presenting some testimony.
Well, the chair of the opposition.
So if let's go into public hearing on House Bill 2900. The one person signed up, Jeb Ladine.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeb Ledeen, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. House Bill 2900 is a bill that on its face appears to be a simple piece of fair play. We would like to make you aware a little bit of the history of this bill. This is not a bill that arose because of some outcry across the state of inequities with young people who are working. It arose because, and was directed totally at the newspaper industry. It arose because the mother of a newspaper carrier called her legislator and complained that her child had received, I believe, $2 for getting a start for a newspaper when an adult under a different circumstance had received $3 for getting starts for a newspaper. The original bill was applied not only in its current form, but also applied to regulate the various prizes that are given, primarily in the newspaper industry, to its carriers for getting starts. The problem that we have with this bill is not, we recognize the need for fair play and to not have abuses, but we have a situation in the newspaper industry where we are probably the major contractor for year-round youth services in the state, probably across the country. The carrier system involves a broad array of motivations and encouragements and supervisions. Carriers are taken out on trips. They are given a variety of prizes as encouragement. They're given the opportunities to win trips to various places. There's all kinds of things that go into that. The result is that in our situation, whereas we might have an adult who was working to get starts for a newspaper, perhaps on the phone, perhaps by car, perhaps door-to-door, we have youngsters who are doing what might be defined as the same work, but under extremely different conditions of training and or supervision. For example, we'll assign a person in the circulation department, will take groups of youngsters out into a specific area and provide them with oftentimes lists of specific homes that are good prospects and supervise them in the neighborhoods, be with them, drive them around, bring them back to maybe at 8:30, take them to a Dairy Queen and buy them some things. And it's a group activity and one that the youngsters very much enjoy, but it requires a level of expense in the training and the supervision that does not exist with adults. So we're concerned that even though we certainly sympathize with the goal, perhaps in some situations, we're concerned with what the impact of this bill might be. I do have a suggestion that some of us had talked about that would answer, I guess, our concern, and it's just a handwritten thing, but it would be to add to this bill something like the following as Section 3, that provisions of Section 2 apply only when the services provided by persons over 18 years of age are identical in all respects to the services provided by persons under 18 years of age, and when supervision and or training by the employer or contractor is identical in all respects for persons under 18 years of age as for persons over 18 years of age. There are situations, certainly, where an individual might hire or contract with both adults and children and say, all right, here's your product, go out, sell it door to door, and you kids get a dollar a sale and you adults get $2 a sale. That, you know, I can agree with, would be unfair, but in our situation where we have a tremendous variance in the supervision costs and the training costs and et cetera, for youngsters as we would for adults, we would have a problem with House Bill 2900 in its existing form. Thanks for the opportunity to address the bill and welcome any questions.
Could you restate your proposed amendment again?
I can, Mr. Chairman, just provide a handwritten copy to you if that would be.
Well, just so everyone.
All right, I will. Suggested new section 3 of the bill. Provisions of section 2 apply only when the services provided by persons over 18 years of age are identical in all respects to the services provided by persons under 18 years of age, and when supervision and or training by the employer or contractor is identical in all respects for persons under 18 years of age as for persons over 18 years of age.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Howe.
Excuse me. I'm interested in pursuing that type of amendment.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind, I would take that over and run it through legislative council to make sure that the form is proper, and would be interested in submitting those during some kind of work session.
Okay.
Would you let me have a rough draft?
I'm sorry, Senator.
I guess I'm not tracking. I don't. Maybe it's Friday morning, but if I, as an adult, were to want to be a newspaper carrier, I think I too would need the same kind of orientation, the same kind of leads for prospective.